This episode of The Starting Block is dedicated to the memory of Kofi Burbridge. Kofi was the keyboard player and flutist for Tedeschi Trucks Band. He was an incredible musician. He passed away recently, and I met him years ago, not unlike my guest today, Wizard. I met him years ago when I was working as an assistant recording engineer in a studio here in Atlanta. And Kofi was, you know, super kind and generous and answered all of my stupid questions and was just an awesome guy. So this episode is dedicated to Kofi. Welcome back to another episode of The Starting Block. A little something different today, a different kind of creative person. Today it is a pre-recorded interview with my good friend Reginald Wizard Jones. Wizard is a multi-instrumentalist and an all-around musician, mostly known as a keyboard player. He kills it in the studio, but he also kills it out on the road. He makes his living as a touring musician, and Wizard has played with some of everyone over the years. TLC, Tony Braxton, New Edition, the SOS Band, Victor Wooten, Justin Bieber, Goody Mob, Outkast, Usher, just tons and tons and tons of groups and singers. And Wizard has left his mighty impression on all of these acts. Wizard's originally from Aliquippa, Pennsylvania, but he makes his home here in the Metro Atlanta area. And I met him years ago when I was working as an assistant engineer in a very small recording studio. And he and I have been friends ever since. I've never said this to his face, not that I wouldn't, but it's just never come up. But Wizard is probably the most talented musician I've ever known personally. And I really consider it an honor to have him on these microphones talking about his life. So I know you're going to enjoy what Wizard has to say. Wizard, thank you so much for doing this. Everyone listening, get ready. This is my good buddy, Reginald Wizard Jones.
Hello, everyone. My name is Wizard Jones. I'm here to answer a few questions for my good buddy Swain, and I hope that you find this informative, or at least entertaining. But Swain, thank you, my brother, for having me. Appreciate you. You had a couple of questions you wanted me to answer, and here goes. The first question was, what is one of your earliest memories of being drawn to music more than the other kids were? Ooh, that goes back a long ways. But it's still pretty much a very vivid and fresh memory. My parents were musicians, and so there was instruments and music in my house my entire life. I know nothing else. Well, maybe a few things about football and cooking, but you know, that's about it. I knew I was drawn to music very early because my dad's quartets and his little ensembles would rehearse at the house. He was a jazz organist, so I thought to be able to get those guys together and they make music together, I thought that was really the coolest thing to ever happen. Didn't know that it would have a big impact on my life like it did, but it wound up influencing the rest of my life, and I'm very, very thankful for that. I would sit and watch them rehearse for hours and could never get enough, but I would have to go to bed for school, and you know, Dad would have to shut it down because me and my sister had to go to school. So the next day they would, you know, they'd come in after work, after working in the steel mills, my dad and his friends, and I'd get in from school a little early, so guitar player would leave his guitar, so I would try to play that, play some drums, crank up the organ and, you know, fire that up. Whatever I could get my hands on, and try to learn how to play. Other kids were outside playing. Didn't matter to me. I was thoroughly entertained by myself. Kept me out of a lot of trouble. That I'm also very thankful for, because I could have gone another way very easily, but chose not to. Music was a lifesaver for me and a way out. You know, after that, I just knew, and everyone around me knew, my friends, the kids growing up, my parents, my aunts and uncles, they knew what I was going to do, probably before I did. But every day we come in from school, I crank up the organ. The kids would stand on the porch and watch me play. And their mama make me do homework if I had homework. When I was about 5, my dad had a gig every year that he performed, a little get together for our community. And it was at the Elks Club, which he was a member of. And my biggest memory from the age of 5 was my dad took a break and I started playing the organ. Of course, I'm 5 years old. I can't reach the pedals, but my dad never used a bass player. So I watched him use his left hand and his feet. So I figured that was the way to play. But I started playing and I drew a crowd. Not trying to get any attention. I was just so hyped up and, you know, just wanting to play. I just started playing. And I think that's when the bug set in. And here I am now. Part two of that first question. I play a lot of a variety of instruments well. Yet I'm primarily known as a keyboard player. When did keys move to the front of the line, so to speak, and how do you feel about that title, keyboard player? Well, it's funny you should ask that question because I think I've told you a little while ago that I actually started on guitar. It was my first primary instrument. It was the first instrument my dad bought me was an acoustic guitar. Don't know why, but that I enjoyed it. I enjoyed all the instruments that we played that were in my house. Growing up, I had my own group. A lot of kids in the neighborhood, we got together. When we found out we had something in common was musical instruments and making music, we would all gather, you know, on different days at each other's house and just jam out, trying to learn some songs, trying to form a group. Well, we had a guitar player. Back in that day, that was the early 70s, two guitar players in an R&B band was normal. And I was too small to carry around an organ because that was the only keyboard we had in the house. And my dad knew it. So when we played the clubs that my dad would play, the little group, quote unquote, that we had, if my dad's organ was there, I would play organ and guitar or whatever I can get my hands on as part of the show, whatever was needed within the band at the time. Then I started moving, you know, more so toward keyboards because we already had a guitar player and we needed a keyboard player. That's kind of what moved me into being a keyboard player outside of, you know, a guitar player. Being a keyboard player doesn't bother me because I sit at one every day to play. So being a keyboard player doesn't bother me. That's what I do. So being labeled as a keyboard player, being that I'm a multi-instrumentalist, doesn't bother me whatsoever. With any instrument in my hand, if I can make some good music, something that makes somebody move, even myself and the other guys, then I'm a happy camper. Let's go to question number two. It says, for those listening who have never had the pleasure, walk us through a typical day on the road as a touring musician. Leave in all the details, sir. Maybe even explain a few of the terms you might use. Okay. Typical day. First, there's so much getting prepared for a tour. That's learning all the material, make sure that it's right, then placing it in an order that the artist thinks might work for him to be entertaining for the audience. At least that could be, with a new artist, at least 2 weeks preparation of rehearsals. Typical day on the road. All right, let's get there. The second thing is, you, depending on how long the tour, in between those rehearsals, you got to find time to pack for that length of time, or living on a bus, living in hotels. Typical day. All right, we're already on the road. Let's say 6 to 8 hour drive to the next city. So that means in order to get there for 1 o'clock sound check, if we're headlining, I'm up at 4, maybe 5 o'clock for a lobby call out of a hotel that I didn't barely spent time in from the night before, because we had sound checking the gig. But anyway, 5 a.m. Lobby call. Bus pulls up. You get on. You load your stuff. You get back in your bunk in your bed on the bus, and you ride the say 6 hours to the next city. You wake up. You go in the hotel. Your next one. Check in. Put your bags down. Get cleaned up. Have breakfast, lunch, whatever the case may be. Now you got to pick up for the venue, say, if we have sound check at 1 o'clock, that means we got to go in and get starting set up. So we probably have depending on how far the venue is from the hotel, we may have a 12:30 lobby call, 12:45 leave, 15 minute drive to the venue. We get there. Normally with touring, you got a crew that knows how your stuff is set up. So you come in, make sure everything is on and working properly, fix any problems, hopefully that they've already fixed. But if not, we try to troubleshoot everything that we can. Get there, we crank up and get it out of our system, because we don't get a chance to jam and let out that other music that's inside of us very often, because now we're dedicated to an artist specifically for this tour. So once they get there, we'll run through a couple of things maybe, and he or she may go, may do one or two songs and go, hey, I'm good. May get good to them and they may go, oh, well, let's try this one. Can I get a little bit more of that? Can I get a little bit more of this in my monitors? Can I bring the background vocalist up? Then we take a break. We got the rest of the time. Now we got dinner coming up. Sometimes we can go back to the hotel before coming back to the venue. But if I'm with an act that's opening, I don't get that pleasure very often. So it's normally come to the venue to stay. We come in, we eat, got a few minutes. Somebody peeks their head in the door and says, showtime 10 minutes. We get dressed, we pray, we hit the stage, count it off, and hopefully the show is blazing and everybody's on one, you know, on the same path, and we just wreck and shop. No matter who is with, we take pride in what we do and we want to bring the best to the people. And that's after that, good show, pack up, dry off, head back to the hotel for a few hours of sleep, drinks, maybe after the show, drinks or whatever the case may be. And the same thing starts the next day, unless we have an off day. Then those wake up times vary. But that's about a typical day in and out of the venue. Doesn't sound exciting, huh? But it is for us, because that's what's going on. It's great. Another two-parter, third question. It says, tell a challenging story about being out on the road. And tell a great one, too. And that could be from... Okay, great. As I got older, which is a wonderful thing, when I tell you at my age of 56 and still traveling the world, performing with some of the greatest acts ever, there's wear and tear on the body that you're not aware of. And I guess that is the same in everyday life. And it's not just what I do. If you don't pay attention, things happen. We were in, I want to say, San Francisco, maybe. Northern California, know that. And I was out with Justin Bieber. Me and my drummer, we, you know, once a week, you know, we got to have steak. We're going to find a nice steak house close to the hotel. We're going to go have dinner. Me and him run out. We grab some dinner. We come back. I'm not feeling too well. Feeling a little sluggish. So we get up. I didn't sleep well at all that night, so I thought something was wrong with the steak because it didn't stay down, put it that way. So it is like, oh man, I didn't sleep. We get on the bus. We head to, British Columbia? We was headed into Canada. So me and Mel, my drummer, we sitting there in the front of the bus. We're talking, we're watching videos and stuff. And I said, man, you feel funny about your steak? Was anything wrong with your steak? He said, no, man, I'm fine. He said, what's up? I said, man, mine didn't agree with me. It didn't stay down. So I was moving forward. We sitting there talking. And we getting into the night. He said, man, I'm going to hit the bunk. I said, cool. And I'm sitting there. I finished watching some TV, some videos and stuff. And the pain hit me like an elephant sat on my chest. There wasn't a thing I could do. I couldn't say anything. Nothing. And, you know, I was having indigestion, so I'm really trying to blame it on indigestion. And God, this is some horrible gas stuck up here in my chest. So I'm on the floor on my knees. Mel comes back to use the restroom on the bus. He said he thought I was praying, which I probably was at that time. So when he comes out of the bathroom, he goes, man, are you okay? I'm going, no, not really, bro. I said, man, that steak or whatever is still with me is killing me. And we sit up a little while longer. The pain goes away. I'm breathing better, feel better. He goes back to bed. It hits me again. I can't get up. I can't say anything. So I crawl to the bunk and I reach inside my tour manager's bunk. And I know I'm hoping that he don't think that I'm trying to do something crazy in there. But I'm like, Josh, come on, man. I need some help. Please help me. That's all I could say. I said, I think I'm having a heart attack. He gets up, he calls. And by this time, we had made it into Vancouver. We're in front of the venue to let off the crew because we're not getting into the hotels yet. So he calls an ambulance. They come and get me. It's snowing out, maybe 3 degrees outside. They didn't take my shirt off and they're examining me. Once again, I'm feeling a little better now, but they still need to go in and take me in for a test. So they take me into the hospital, which happens. They get the bus driver to drive to the hospital. Luckily, the hospital is only 4 blocks away from the venue. The ambulance meets me 2 blocks. They meet right in the middle. They get me to the hospital, and I find out from x-rays that I did have a heart attack. I had a artery collapse. One of my main arteries on my heart collapsed. And they have to put in a stent. And my daughter asked me, was I afraid? And I said, afraid of what? She said, of dying. I said, no, not at all. Because if the good Lord takes me now, I've done everything and then some, a whole lot of some, more than I'd ever imagined as a kid and even as an adult. I have 2 beautiful children, grandchildren I watched come into this world. They're well on their way into being adults. Well, they're adults now. And responsible. So I've lived a phenomenal life. I do believe in God. And I wasn't afraid, because if it was my time, that means I have left something here. I finished learning what I was supposed to learn, and I finished teaching what I was supposed to teach while on the face of this earth. So my mission was complete, which brings me to part 2 of this question of telling a great story. One of my greatest experiences on the road was with an organization called United We Funk. It was comprised of 5 70s and 80s funk bands that I admired as a kid growing up that I thought was the bomb, all of them. Had all of the records. It's just amazing because I love music, but I just had all the records of these artists. And the groups that made up United We Funk was Charlie Wilson from the Gap Band, the SOS Band, the Daz Band, the Barkays, and Confunction. So they asked me to join. They wanted me to be a part of this organization from the beginning, but at the time I was with Usher, and I couldn't leave that assignment. I just got it, and as music director, I just couldn't walk away to do that. So there came an opportunity where I was able to pick up a little further down the line. But anyway, I'm here with five of my favorite groups. I was playing with the SOS Band at the time, and they had kept wanting me to be a part of this. And a friend of mine that was there on synth bass before me, and Raul from the SOS Band, he said, man, if you liked Wiley Morris, who went on to become a Grammy Award-winning producer, said, you're going to love Wiz. So they sent me the tape. And when I tell you, the only good thing was that I knew all of these songs from back in the day. Now, what made this so spectacular for me was that, well, several things that made it spectacular. One, my favorite groups, boom, love that. Two is that it was just one big band. Most of the musicians came from the Barkays. They made up the majority of the band, and all the other bands had two of the principals. Well, one for the Gap Band, that was Charlie, which is kind of started Charlie's solo career. Then there was Mary Davis and Abdul Rauf from the SOS Band, Michael Cooper and Felton Pilot from Confunction. Then you had a Daz Band. There was Bobby Harris and Skip Martin from the Daz Band, and Larry Dotson and James Alexander from the Barkays. And then they were able to bring in a couple of musicians from their respective groups. And when I tell you there was 22 musicians on stage at one time with a sound that was so massive, I always explained it as being standing on the tracks and you knew the train was coming right at you and you didn't even care because you wanted to get hit by that train full of funk. It was amazing. The arrangements. And like I said, it wasn't that SOS played a set, chain sets, Barkays played a set. No, it was one hit after another, 2.5 hours of constant hits. Not the fillers, but the hits from these respective artists. Everyone liked what I did, coming into the organization with no rehearsals, knowing the material, knowing the segues going in from song to song. So that sparked Confunction calling when they needed another keyboard player for their shows when United We Funk wasn't working. I was already working with SOS. The Barkays would call. Charlie would call. And Daz Band would call. So just now I'm in the mix with some of my favorite artists in the world in the R&B funk era. That one still just goes, they all should be this good. And not that they weren't. It was something I could relate to. It was something I grew up with that I had fond memories of. And they respected and kept me around because they felt I was good at what I did. That's the biggest compliment I've ever had, probably during the course of my career. That was wonderful. I love you guys for giving me that opportunity to be a part of that. If you can find it, the United We Funk All Stars, there is a live CD out there. There's some stuff on YouTube. Go and check it out. It is on and popping. When I tell you that thing is just dripping with funk, it just smells from the from your computer. It's a beautiful thing. So check it out for those who are listening. And I hope that some of these questions entertained you or you found out a little bit more about Wizard Jones. Swain, I thank you for having me. I love you, brother. Take care. God bless. Good night, folks.